Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special call event today. It's called Liberating the Power of Love, Four Secrets to Creating Extraordinary Relationships. My name is Stephen Dine. I'm the founder and CEO of the Shift Network, and I'm really delighted to be hosting today's program, one of my favorite subjects of love, because I really feel that love is at the foundation of creating a better world, a one that expresses our divine nature, that really creates a world that works for all, and it all begins with how we engage in deep relationship with each other. And I'm also delighted to be bringing you to our two relationship experts today, Lyon Goodman and Carista Luminaire. They have not only devoted a lifetime to really harvesting the secrets of extraordinary love, they've explored areas from neuroscience to secure attachment theory to family relationships to the psychology of beliefs and esoteric spirituality, and really created a profound synthesis of the best understandings available about how we turn love into an actual practice that we can get better at and excel at and even create truly extraordinary relationships. And I have witnessed the transformation in them as they have entered into their own sacred partnership and really blossomed with all of what they're teaching today and putting into practice. It's really been quite a beauty to behold and to be part of and to be blessed by. So thank you, Lyon and Carista, for joining us here today.
Thank
Very
you,
happy
Steve.
To be here.
Well, we've only got 1 hour with you, but I want to let people know that we are going to have a chance to go much deeper with Lyon and Carista in an upcoming course called The Power of Love, which builds upon what you're going to hear today and really takes it to another level of being able to embody it and make it real in our lives. So we'll share a bit more about that later in today's program. But as we begin, I think, Lyon and Carista, I first always just like to start on a personal level. So, you know, it's vulnerable to put out work around love because it requires us to dig deep into our own history and our own hearts and our own relationships. And, you know, what was it that put you on this path to wanting to share this profound work around love? So, Carista, maybe you can begin.
Sure. Well, it's got several different influences for me that really gestalted into this fascination about the power of love. Began when I was a young psychology major at Harvard, freshly graduated, and I had a practice under the supervision of a great therapist back then. Within a year, I had this inquiry, what are we doing as adults healing ourselves from childhood trauma and abuse? This is such an inefficient use of our adult life, not to mention the tens of thousands of dollars that we spend. And there began an inquiry which has really guided all of my life's work, which is, if we're all, many of us, are spending so much time healing ourselves from childhood, what can we do to prevent this kind of adverse impact of childhood wounding? Of course, I had to go into my own experience, and I come from a background with a lot of abuse in it. I had a rageaholic dad, unbeknownst to him, had very strong impact and played out in a lot of my primary relationships the first half of my life. And I had sexual abuse, luckily not from a family member, but it happened when I was younger, childhood babysitter, and I was physically abused, and so I have had a lot of trauma. In addition to working with so many clients as an attachment specialist and trauma specialist, and that all kind of adds up to this understanding of what is really going on with us. You know, we all have our stories, and the common theme that finally came to me decades into researching and working on myself was, everyone's confused about love, or most of us are confused about love. There's a lucky few who had the secure, loving parents or conditions. And therefore, if we're confused about love, then is there a way to be clear what healthy love is and what it isn't? And so my early attachment work around how to optimize supporting a couple and preparing for a child before they even have it became my passion. And I went through that initiation myself in preparation with my husband for my daughter. I had to walk my talk. And there I began to really understand how the ability of each parent to know what love is becomes just so important. Just to kind of complete this reflection of what's inspired me, is the last 10 years the neuroscience of attachment has brought forth a very clear understanding with over 2,000 studies showing the correlation between the early childhood attachment and what we play out in our adult intimacy dynamics, personally, romantically, and as well as in our professional relationships. And so we have a lot to share about that.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you also just sharing about your background with having traumatic childhood as well, because I think that's a part of the story for all of us, that we all experience different wounds around love, and that we create defense patterns around that, partially because it's such a powerful and important and vital ingredient for our lives that we have to deal with, like, whatever level of wounding we've had around love. I'd love for Lion, you to share some of your background as well that led you into this deep inquiry and teaching.
Bet. I always thought that I had a fairly boring childhood, you know, middle class, suburban Denver, you know, dad was a shopkeeper, mom was a housewife. And I thought, gee, it was just boring. But as I began to study psychology, I realized that it was actually quite dysfunctional, that my parents functioned kind of like ships passing in the night. They rarely touched. They communicated in sort of grunts and short sentences, and there was a lot of non-communication. So both of my parents were withdrawing types, avoidant types, we call it. And so I learned that relationship was about, you know, not getting attached. And in fact, when I began studying bonding with Carista, I realized that I didn't really bond with anyone as a child. I was pretty much a lonely kid wandering around trying to figure out what it meant to have a relationship. I wanted friends, but I didn't know how to create friends. And so I grew up and studied consciousness and the mind and psychology and beliefs and physiology and all that stuff. I became very smart about things. And I had great relationships, but there was always something missing. And it turns out what was missing was me. So I was not able to really connect to my partner, or if I did, it was very temporary, and then I'd withdraw, just like my mom did. So it wasn't until I met Carista and began to really study this field that I realized how my own childhood programming created a kind of dysfunctional relationship in my own personal relationships. And it also showed up in my business relationships. When I had people working for me, I would sometimes just make decisions suddenly and tell people what they had to do, which didn't please them, but, you know, it was my right because I was the owner and all that. And so it turns out that it was the same problem, that I wasn't really connected to the people that worked for me or that I worked for, and it caused problems. So all of this study brought me to understand that there was something fundamental in me that was missing and that I could change it. And that's what was exciting, is that I realized this can be changed. I'm not stuck with this for the rest of my life. And so
this meaning not being so relational. This is really what you're applying to, applying is that your confusion about how to connect in a positive way that was sustainable. And that's what a lot of us miss.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I was also wanting to draw out, that I think so many of us who are smart, or, you know, we've been educated and we get on spiritual path and we get a lot of ideas that are running in our kind of higher brain centers, but our programming about love tends to come from a lot of lower brain centers that are much more instinctual and much more unconscious. And so even if we think we've got it all wired, chances are we're still running some of these outdated scripts. So, Carista, I'd love for you to share a little bit more about it. I know you've got a great background with the whole area of the neurosciences and attachment theory, and share a little bit about that from what's the actual neurobiology behind how a secure attachment happens.
Yeah. Well, there's just for the simple reflection for today's call, so much of our bonding and connection and experience of love is being driven by our brain. We often think of it as our heart. Our heart is either open or closed based on whether our brain is in a direct experience of feeling safe and secure with someone, or they're threatening us in some way. And often the threats are coming to us nonverbally, in the eye glances, in the body language, in the tone of the voice. So the neuroscience has been showing us, the neuroscience of attachment, that we have a higher brain, a loving brain, which is more pro-relationship with its functions, the empathy, the mutuality, the ability to listen and collaborate and go for a win-win. And then there's the primitive brain, which is often referred to as the warring brain. It's the part of our brain that puts us into an automatic reaction of fight or flight or freeze, which are the survival alarm, and Lyon's excellent in going into the details of the amygdala. The automatic primitive brain will hijack the loving brain, which are the frontal lobes, and we then get these anti-relationship functions of being right and attacking, controlling, defending, you know, those reactions that just shut us down or make us want to criticize or go into escalation cycles. And that really, what's happening to the brain, and then whether we go into these kind of hyperarousal or these hypoarousal activation cycles, for those of us who do, there's not a sense of a safety zone where we can actually feel safe and secure with someone. And that means we're in insecure attachment. So you're either securely attached or insecurely attached to yourself and with another. And most of that can be diagnosed by seeing what was patterned with each parent. So if you were securely attached to your parent, that's about 80% of the time your parent was there, your mother and or father optimally. When any of us felt unsafe or, you know, needed some reassurance in the middle of the night, crawling in the floor, is that a snake or a rope, and we put out a cry of distress, what love does with a secure attachment parent is the parent makes the child's need a top priority. Your distress is my distress, and everything else drops until you come back into a state of security. And so the first few years, this is all wired, Stephen. By the time we talk, our attachment style is actually laid down neurologically. Now, the great news is we can rewire it, which we can talk about. The thing is that most people don't realize is that our parents' nonverbal language of love, because we didn't have our verbal capacity developed, their eyes, when we cried, if the parent came and they were angry or frustrated and their eyes were upset with us, or their tone of voice was angry, like, what are you crying for? Or their body language was shut down, or they let us just cry it out. We began, many of us, to default subconsciously into this defense system of insecurity, which has two aspects. We're either in an avoidant, insecure, where we withdraw, or we go into anxious. And all of this, what's called pursuer avoidant, is actually playing out in most romantic relationships that have a lot of high drama. Honey, you want to add to that?
Yes, as you were talking, I have to share that right outside my window are two doves kind of kissing each other. It's so sweet.
Secure attachment.
Right. I think what's important here is that, you know, when you got your needs met, everything was fine when you were a child, when you were an infant. You know, you cried, you got your needs met. That's cool. You can go back into a calm zone. And if your needs weren't met, then as an infant, you're kind of confused and anxious, and you try to figure out, what do I need to do to get my needs met? And then we create strategies for getting our needs met, and there's different strategies. Like if you're just not going to get your needs met, you can't stay in that anxious state all the time, so you withdraw into yourself and say, well, I guess I'll have to take care of myself. These aren't verbal decisions. They're nonverbal, very primitive decisions. Or you might say, well, if I escalate, if I get really loud, then I'll get my needs met. But it might be met with anger, as Krista said, or upset rather than care. And so we set up some kind of strategy when we're little to get what we need. And often that strategy gets repeated throughout our lives. So as an example, a baby who comes to the conclusion, if I cry and fuss, I'll get my needs met. That's a good belief and a good conclusion for a baby, but it's not very attractive for an adult. And most of us know at least one person who, you know, is crying and fussing just to get their needs met as an adult, and it's not very pretty. So,
yeah.
So we're trying to examine what was the strategy that you came up with as a child, how is it currently affecting your adult relationships, and what can you do about it if it's not working so well?
Mm. Yeah,
I think that's what can you do about it is so key, because it's like a lot of us can see these neurotic patterns, and especially under duress, if we're in a fight, we'll regress back into these instinctual patterns, but we often are a little mystified how to actually unwind the pattern. So, Krista, I wonder if you could share a little bit about how to begin to unwind the strategy that might have been helpful when we were four, but is no longer helpful when we're 44.
Yeah, there's just so many exciting gems to share here. I'm going to pick a few. The first thing is to realize that the need for secure love, we never outgrow it, which was revolutionary for me. It was a missing piece for Lion and I when we came together, two high-achieving, you know, well-successful professionals, and yet even with all our expertise about relationship, working with clients, there was this place where we would default to insecurity. And what we learned was that the need to depend on someone, to have someone, like in the desert of life, you have an oasis to go home to, is we never outgrow that neurological need that we had as a child. And so it's about being independent and interdependent. That's the best of really experiencing the power of love. And if you don't have a significant other, don't be distressed. There, you can be, you know, deepening these deep, rich connections with friends or siblings or children. What's driving a lot of the challenge here is that one needs to know what is the subconscious strategy, the common sensitivity that is driving your reactions or your fear of opening up that puts you into a fight or flight or even freeze and fold. Those are the more the traumatic when you feel really threatened by someone. The fear of being unimportant or invisible is for some. Do I really matter? It can be with your boss who reminds you of your rageaholic father. It can be, you know, your colleague who has temper tantrums like a two-year-old. And what is the trigger in each of us? The fear of being abandoned, the fear of being rejected, fear of being blamed, fear of being controlled. So we need to know where our fear and insecurity is. That is the beginning of rewiring one's ability to know, to recognize, hey, this person is actually not healthy for me to be in relationship with, or I can't depend on them to fulfill my needs. That's why I'm always unhappy. I either invite them to learn how to rewire into more healthy dynamics, or part of my self-love and self-care is that I accept this person's not open to my reflection that they're threatening me. You know, I saw it with my abuse background, mixed with a lot of love as well. I was a hybrid, as we call it, that love was mixed with being threatened or shamed. Love is mixed with judgment, feeling unsafe. That was normal for me with a rageaholic dad who I know really loved me, didn't know how to. And so I have this tolerance for being in these unsafe conditions. So the first commitment is to really want to experience secure love, because that is the power, safety and security, and to know what's happening in your brain, what your body sensations are telling you about the fact that you're getting triggered, and then learn the specific practices, which we love to share.
Great. One thing I just want to echo is just how revolutionary it is to re-embrace the importance of safety and security in love, partially because in our new paradigm circles, there's always a tendency to try to override our fears and go beyond our fears and not be dependent, everything transpersonal this. But it's like we can do violence to the very, you know, instinctual, normal, natural, younger parts that just need that wiring of sense of safety and security. And I know I overrode that for a long time and to the detriment of our relationship, my relationship with my wife. So I really appreciate you emphasizing that.
Yeah, hey, Chris, I want to add to that.
Sure.
Yeah, honey, you got something
okay,
there?
Okay, go ahead. You add first, then I'll add something.
Okay, I was just going to mention the ACE study. You want me to wait? I was going to tie it into what Steve was saying.
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Lai and I came across a study called the ACE study. You can find it on the net. 17,000 Kaiser members voluntarily participated in the study to find out how stressful or traumatic experiences during childhood affect adult health. And the results are staggering. So many people experience harsh events in their childhood. Listen to this. 63% of the people who were in the study experienced at least one category of childhood trauma. Over 20% experienced three or more categories of trauma, what they call adverse childhood experiences, ACE. 11% emotional abuse, 28% physical abuse, 21% sexual abuse, et cetera, et cetera. And then they have neglect as a distinction. So, you know, our civilization is wrought with trauma, and that's how we're all relating to each other, in defense of being hurt. Go ahead, Hans.
Right. If you study the brain, you learn very quickly that there's a danger detector. They're called the amygdala. There's two of them, one on each side, right inside the temples. And this part of the brain is always looking for danger. Now, you know, when we were around saber-toothed tigers, when we were evolving as hominids, it was really important to see what was dangerous. And so this part of the brain evolved to alert us when anything looked possibly dangerous and caused us to react, as Krista said, the fight or flight, fold or freeze syndrome. So these parts of the brain are still operating all the time in our fast-moving technology, even though we're mostly safe. You know, we're not at war, but we have fast-moving vehicles, and we have internet changing every sub-second, and so we're in the midst of this, what to the brain is, a war zone, and things are dangerous all the time. And we look to our relatives, to the people we're with, for safety and security. We're human animals, and if you think about monkeys in the trees, if a monkey gets pushed out of the troop, it is dead meat. You know, it is not going to survive on its own. We're social creatures. We need each other. And we're not that far from the monkeys or the apes, so we have this need to be able to run into someone's arms and say, am I safe? Am I okay? And then that mm-hmm. person will say, yes, you're safe with me. I've got you. I love you. I'm protecting you. And then we can relax again and come back into that state of calm. So the amygdalas are like an alarm that go from green, which is everything's okay, I'm safe, to yellow, which is there could be danger, there could be danger, watch out, watch out. And that starts shutting down the cortex. It just shuts down the part of our brain that's the higher thought process, the reasoning process, the perspective process. And then if it goes into red, I am in danger, it's like a fire alarm in a movie theater. Get out, get out, get out. It's all you can think about. And so it takes over, and when we're in that state, we really need to be regulated. We either have to self-regulate in some way and calm ourselves down, or we need someone else there who says, you're okay, I've got you, you're safe. And then we can calm down again.
Now, that's what love is.
That's
love
right.
Love is depending on someone to actually keep you safe and secure. And to when we're in distress, many of us, independent high achievers, think, oh, we can use our mind and regulate off the computer, and we're running all these, you know, cortisol, adrenal levels, and getting our immune system shot and getting sick. The truth is, we really need to be hugged. We need to be, you know, held and feel the pleasure of connecting to someone and feeling love flow. The power of love is the protection. It's the healer, the master
right.
healer.
Yeah. And if we didn't
there's
get that
very
as a
liberating
child.
About feeling like it's like the monkey part of me needs a little nurturance here.
That's right.
Just be okay with that, not to be all kind of lofty and whatever sophisticated. It's just like the very instinctual is very important.
Right. So we teach specific techniques for how to calm your partner's amygdala, and I'll give you one of our favorite techniques is the three love languages. So to a baby, a baby doesn't have words yet, and so their mother or their father's safety and security is delivered through the voice, which is soft and easy. It's not panicky or loud. Through the eyes and eye contact, you're safe, I see you, I've got you, and physical touch, I'm holding you. So we teach couples and singles how to deliver that kind of signal to the partner when they're upset or afraid or frustrated or in any of these states of upset. We show them that these three simple love languages are what help the brain settle down and back into a green state where then the cortex, the thinking mind, can come back online. So if you're trying to argue with someone who's upset, you're kind of wasting your breath because that part of their brain is offline. You know, they're in panic mode.
We do a lot of work with rewiring couples in high escalated insecure cycles who just don't know how to crack the code, all the way with those who have serial infidelity. Often it's just their subconscious defense strategies. And the same science we're talking about, the art and science of extraordinary relationships, can be experienced with your children, with your colleagues. If you have a hot reactor boss, you can do so much to keep yourself calm, much less to calm them using these three nonverbals. So what the extraordinary aspect of a relationship is when you're in secure connection, what you recognize as healthy love with someone, and that you share that value to keep cultivating that.
Hmm. Well, listen, let's shift gears a little bit because in the title of today's call, we have four secrets to extraordinary relationships. I want to make sure we get through all the secrets. I have all these questions and we keep going further down the rabbit hole of the science, but let's get back around to the core secrets that build upon the foundations you've really laid out so beautifully. So, Krista, maybe you could start with what do you really see as the first key, first secret to applying what we're talking about here in extraordinary relationship?
Sure. Well, the first power of love secret that we're sharing is to learn the basic building blocks of love that you missed growing up, and to know your attachment style, that which we describe as you're either securely attached, and that's when you can feel calm and you can feel that, you know, you feel connected and attracted and valued and tuned into your partner, your child, your colleague, and everything's feeling very caring. 80% of the time, they say neurologically, that's secure attachment, 4 out of 5 interactions. And then to understand if you're in the insecure spectrum, whether you're in the avoidant, which is where you withdraw and shut down out of the fear of being rejected, or you're in the anxious, which is where you're more prone to escalate when you feel threatened. And there's even a fourth attachment style, what we call the love style, which is the trauma attachment, which we'll share for those who want to really dig deep with us in the course. So to know your love style becomes very, very important. And to really understand that when you're in these escalated cycles, no one means to be hurting each other. We're just confused, and we don't know how to care and create safety and security. Lynn, you want to take on the next one?
Sure. So the other basic building block that we're talking about, which we have discussed, is that it is possible to rewire your brain. You know, neurologists call it neuroplasticity, and it's a fairly new science. When I was studying neurology back in the 70s, they pretty much figured you had a brain, you were born with it, it was done developing by the time you were 18, and all you were going to do from that point on was lose neurons. So today we know how complex the brain is. It's gotten incredibly complex in the last 20 years. And so it is known that we can reprogram it, that it's reprogramming itself all the time. So in order to reprogram it in relationship, what we need to do is have a cooperative agreement with our partner, and as Krista said, it doesn't have to be a romantic partner, where you make each other's safety a top priority so that you can rely on the person. And then when you're in panic mode or you get anxious, you can call up your buddy and say, I'm feeling anxious, and they're there for you. So that being there for you is a way of settling your brain back down, where you say, oh, I am loved, I am connected, I do have what I need, I'm okay. And this is the beginning of that reprogramming. So, you know, the good news is, regardless of your background, you can begin to reprogram your brain and get online so that more love can come through you. Because when we're upset, love is kind of stuck somewhere, it's not coming through us, and when we can calm down, then it starts circulating again.
Yeah.
Karista, do we have any other building blocks we want to cover?
Yeah, sure. Another building block that we talk about a lot, it sounds rather obvious, and yet it's not practiced much, and that is the need to practice. To rewire what we're talking about here, there's a huge subconscious defense complex of patterns for many people, particularly those with a lot of wounding. And the way the neurology rewires is actually through practicing new patterns of engaging with yourself. That's the self-love practices we share, and then with another. And as we said, it can be in work where you tolerate being threatened by someone, where you learn how to share your vulnerability and perhaps elicit more respect or more kindness, or you're the one that's driving the insecurity. You're the one that's being the bully like your parent was, and that you actually practice learning how to be more kind and more loving. So practice, practice, practice. Like Lyon says often, you know, whether if you're an artist or you're a carpenter, you need to really master the art of it. You have to practice the basics. So once you know your love style, and then you can actually distinguish the other person's love style, then the remedies for rewiring become very obvious.
It's interesting. So many disciplines, from like martial arts to meditation, practice is so foundational, and yet we often don't think of it in terms of love. It does really make it a practice, and that's revolutionary in itself.
Yeah.
Well, Lyon, let's jump over to the second secret now, which is really all about how love functions as a power. What do you mean about that?
Well, you think about what are the other powers you know, like strength is a power and persistence is a power, and when you think about how power is used, it can either be used well, like we power our cars to move us from place to place, or it can be used badly, like a dictator or a monarch who doesn't care about others. And so when we see love as a power, it may be the most important power, because love can heal people, and love can even overcome hate, which is probably the most negative power there is. So you think about leaders like Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa or Martin Luther King, and they were able to use love to actually move the world. They transformed societies by using love. And so when you begin looking at love as a power, it becomes extraordinary. It becomes like, wow, what can I do with this power of love? If I can change myself and I can change other people by loving them, what else is possible? And so, you know, we think it's your birthright to experience and express love. And if you have the ability to give love and receive love, that gives you strength and resilience. People who feel loved are solid in the world, and people who don't feel loved are weakened by that lack. So that's one of the things we love to talk about, because there's so many ways that love is powerful, because power is something that you can move things with, and you can move the world with love.
Yeah, you know,
Chris, anything to that?
Yeah, when Lion was talking about the strength and the weakness, it made me think about the days when I'm in conflict with Lion or my teen daughter, who I love both dearly, and we have great secure love. We're human, we trigger each other, that's just part of life. And the days I'm in conflict, or the hours or the minutes, my ability to focus and be creative and feel really connected to the joy of life is diminished. It's always the case. And as soon as the healing and the warmth is there, you know, I just feel connected and vibrant and excited. And that's how these conflicts actually impact our, not only our neurology, but our immunological system. And so it becomes very important in exploring the power of love to look at if one is tolerating a lot of these, you know, high escalation cycles or disconnected cycles. Love itself, it's a virtue, and it needs to be nourished in the person's heart. Like you think of every opportunity there's a conflict in life, you can actually practice love. We talk about love having many shades and hues of virtues, like respect is kind of a sub-virtue of love, or kindness, appreciation, empathy. So when there's a conflict with someone, the great power of love, developing it as a living power to wield, to harness, to express and embody, is I could react and default into my attack mode, and then we'll both be estranged and have a total dysfunctional experience. Or I, the one who wants to wield the power of love as a, you know, beneficent force in the world, in my personal world, in the world, I can choose kindness rather than reactivity. And we have to actually help and train the nervous system to develop the reaction, the response from the reaction. So that is really the art of love, is to really want to cultivate the virtues of love.
Beautiful. Well, Lionel, how about we go into the third secret here? And I know that we've talked a little bit about this already around the neurosciences, but let's take a step deeper with the third secret.
Well, there's been such great research, including MRI studies of people in love and different functions of the brain, that we've taken all of these sciences and kind of wrapped them into practical techniques. You know, the one that I shared about the three love languages, you know, this comes directly out of neurology, out of the study of the psychology of how we developed as children, and the understanding of the limbic system, the cortex, and the hormones like oxytocin and how they function in the brain. So every one of these understandings and studies from neurology, from psychology, our desire is to make them practical, because you can study books all day, but it doesn't change anything in your life. You've got to get it into the practice, the practical aspects of how do I actually change things. And I'll give you an example. You know, when Carista is upset, she sounds a lot like my mother sounded when she was upset. So my natural tendency, of course. I say this all the time, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. So you know, my natural tendency, my instinct is to get out, go away, get the hell away from it as far, as quickly as possible. So I had to train myself to be counterintuitive, to go opposite of my natural instincts. and to go toward her instead. Now, that took some training because every cell in my body wanted to go the opposite direction. But by understanding...
Because he's avoidant.
I'm an avoidant.
By neurological wiring.
That's right. That's my wiring tells me to avoid. So by understanding the neurology and understanding the need for safety and security and making a commitment to that safety and security, then I could change my behavior. It came out of that deeper understanding and commitment. And now I can move toward her and hold her and pull her close and say, it's okay, honey, I've got you. And she says things like,
oh.
She can tell you how she feels when I do that.
It's very sweet the way you say that, Krista. It's very embodied. It really becomes real. It's, oh.
It does. And he wants to protect me rather than threaten me when he feels disconnected. And that's a priority for him, is really what the fourth power of love is, that commitment to rewire those tendencies to damage our relationships through harming each other and focus on creating secure, positive bonds. It's the art of rewiring. And that is what love is creating safety and security so that we can actually have the pleasure of connection rather than the fear of connection. And that whoever you're in relationship with, friend, colleague, especially your foes, you know, is it worth investing in this relationship if you're constantly feeling unsafe and insecure? What's your tolerance for that? You know, if you have a high-powered job and your boss is terrifying you all the time and you can't report it to them in a way that helps them care, then you may want to think twice. What's most important, your peace of mind, your well-being, or the paycheck? So these decisions we make all day long. Now, everyone can learn if you're open to hear, hey, when Lion says, honey, right now you're making me feel insecure, or I say it to him, we have an agreement. That is actually the fuel for rewiring from insecure to secure. We couldn't go to our parents, many of us, and say, you're scaring me. You are scaring me right now by telling me to yell at me while I set the table, and I'm afraid of you. And we think we just can't speak up, we'll get in trouble, we'll get abandoned or rejected. So part of the rewiring is to have someone you can say, hey, you're scaring me. And they go, I am? Oh, come here. I've got to look at that. You know, I care about my impact. That's really, really what the great power of love is we commit to create safety and security for each other. And if we mess up, which we all do, Lion and I still trip each other up all the time, even in nonverbals. I'm like sitting there thinking I'm being the love goddess, and I have a little, he says, I want to get you a chocolate, and I have a little grimace in my face that reminds him of his disapproving mother, and I have no idea why I've lost him. What matters is not that I'm triggering him. What matters is that I care to repair it, and that is what love is. We care about our impact. And when someone gives us feedback, we've, you know, really created a significant impact in them. Whether we agree or not, we just have to care. That's what empathy is. And then if the relationship's really important, we want to find out what we need to repair. And sometimes it's all their projection, and that matters too. If you have a partner or a colleague who has a lot of trauma, part of loving them is taking on helping them feel safe with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lion, I'd love to bring in another little angle on this, because I know you have such a background with beliefs and transforming beliefs, and I know you're going to be doing some of this work in the upcoming course, The Power of Love, as well. But I'd love for you to just share a little bit about how these our deep-seated beliefs affect this whole dynamic around love.
I love talking about beliefs, as you know. It's my favorite topic. So I see beliefs not as intellectual concepts, but actually the infrastructure of the human mind. You know, our beliefs are like the Lego blocks that we use to build our experiences. And so when we're first born, even in the womb, we're getting messages about what the world is and who we are. If our mother is afraid all the time because of her circumstances while we're still in the womb, we're getting her fear hormones programmed into our bodies. So we believe, even before we're born, that the world is a dangerous place. So this is how deep beliefs go. They're really at the infrastructure, and most beliefs get pushed down into the subconscious mind. So part of the belief work is to go down and look at what are those core beliefs, those earliest beliefs that we took on. Some of them were indoctrinated by our parents. You shouldn't do that. Don't do that. We just observed them. This is how you love. This is how you treat people. or sometimes their conclusions. I guess if I do this, then I will get what I need. And so we look deeply into our belief structure and find out what those old beliefs are, and then we use a technique to clear them one by one, which I call the belief closet process. And by doing that, it's sort of like clearing a garden before you plant. You know, you have to take out the rocks and weeds, and then you till the soil, and you amend the soil, and you put in some watering systems, and then you're ready to plant the new seeds. And people walk around trying to do affirmations to change their minds, to change their brains, and it doesn't work because they might say, I am loved, but then immediately inside an old subconscious belief pops up that says, you got to be kidding, nobody loves you. And so by clearing the negative beliefs out, then we can plant new positive beliefs, and that changes everything. It changes our attitude, changes our behavior, changes how we relate to others and how we even see others, because beliefs operate like lenses. So that's what we do, is we take a deep dive into our belief structure, see what is down there in the subconscious mind, and then start pulling out the weeds.
Well, I love the way you really complement each other with your background and expertise. I mean, all of the deep work around secure attachment and lion years around beliefs, and then all the spiritual practice and the relational practice, it's really come together into this very beautiful whole, which is part of why we're very excited that today's not the end of the story, that people can really go much deeper and much further with this work with the two of you, with your upcoming course called The Power of Love, The Art and Science of Extraordinary Relationships. And part of what just excites me about this is just knowing what a tangled thicket relationships are for most people, and how important it is for us to really get it right, because we cannot create heaven on earth, we cannot birth the shift in our world, we cannot really express our divine nature until we figure out how to do love and intimate relationships really well. And there's so many different schools, and I think it can be a little confusing thinking about how to synthesize all of it. And what I think you guys have really done better than anybody I've seen is bring together all these threads into a very coherent whole. So it's going to be a 7-week course, and you can see it at powerofloveCourse.com. And we're going to talk about it for a little bit here, partially because we're really committed to serving things to you, the people who are listening, who they can really serve in your transformation. They don't just inspire you about the possibility, but really help you make these concepts, ideas, and practices real in your life, so that you can savor the power of love in your life, that you can have secure relationships and really experience that sense of fulfillment and joy that comes from being so intimately seen and held and connected to. So, again, you can go to powerofloveCourse.com and begin to see all the details. And what I'd love for maybe just to start off with, both Lion and Krista, just to share from your own heart about really why you're making this offering and what's the really deeper value that you want people to get from it. And let's start with Lion.
I'm feeling my heart right now as you ask the question, and I can tell you that I feel my heart more now than I ever have before in my life. I knew that my heart was there, it kind of pumped blood, you know, I knew it was a muscle that circulated blood, and I knew about love at an intellectual level. And now I know love at an emotional, physical, intellectual, and spiritual level. And that's what I want to share. I want everyone to have that transformation that comes from a deep understanding of themselves and other people, where our hearts can open to each other and we can feel each other and experience each other and treat each other kindly and move people and move the world and change laws and do social action and help each other. So you know, my goal is probably the same as all of your listeners, which is to transform the world into a place where our children are safe and our grandchildren are safe and people love each other and we're doing the best for each other. So it starts right here. It starts at home, right inside your chest, with your heart. And it's not just your heart. It's also your mind, your body, your spirit. So it's a full-spectrum research project to untangle that thicket that you were talking about, to take it apart piece by piece and begin finding that path through the thicket so that we can find heaven on earth, creative.
Well, the sincerity in what you share just actually brought a tear to my eyes. It's really beautiful to hear the depth of your love and commitment in this offering. Krista, how about you?
Yes, I was very touched, sweetie. What moves me is feeling with my open-hearted nature the suffering of people confused about love and realizing we allude to this kind of complex of confusion, and yet the rewiring, the opening of the heart is a simple journey if one chooses it for many. For some who have had a lot of trauma, it's more complex, and with great healers that can be moved along quite beautifully. And so my passion is to spread the word that love is here to be experienced, to be embodied, to be expressed, to be engaged with, and it's really the joy of life. It's the mana, because we can experience all kinds of wonderful things in our solo practices with the light, with consciousness, with the God force for those who feel that connection. It's only a half of the experience of life, the independence, the interdependence with someone, to feel love flowing back and forth, to me, is what the great experience is of being a human being. And so I, in my own experience of being one of those people that was deeply harmed and healed and shut down and feeling the freedom and liberation, recovering and restoring and repairing myself, I love to support anyone who wants to join me and us in the path to really wield the power of love to create heaven on earth, inside and out, and between
us. Well, it's beautiful. Well, it's so evident from both of you just how much this is an expression of your own love and your own heart to be bringing this work out. And I just really want to offer my gratitude, since some of this material I've only recently been exposed to, and it has had such a profound impact in my relationship with Deva. And so it's really foundational. Even if we think we're very advanced on the path, we've done a lot of work on ourselves, that some of the neuroscience, the attachment theory, and the belief work is really getting to these foundational levels that open the portals to a new kind of relationship and understanding. So just on a high level, I want to share a little bit about the program. It's going to be on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time. There's going to be 90-minute talks every week, which include Q&A and engagement time. There's also a whole range of different other elements, from small group practice sessions to an online learning community. People get recordings and PDF transcripts. So there's a lot of ways that you can really take this in and then embody it. And Lion and Chris are giving practices every week that you can do with your partner, family, workmates, that you can really put this into action, since this is all about making it real, not just getting some theories, but really making the power of love real in your life. So let's take a little tour of the actual modules. And I think that part of the value in doing this is also hearing some of these core insights that are the foundational building blocks of manifesting the power of love. So maybe we can just alternate back and forth. Maybe Lion, you want to share a little bit about the building blocks of love in module one?
Sure. This opening module, we look at all the building blocks we talked about and the other building blocks that we haven't had time to mention. So, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, it all starts with the basics and where you got programmed, how you got programmed, what love looks like for you, and what you imagine it is. And then we start taking it apart, and we also ask the question, what is healthy love? You know, if you have a certain kind of love and strategy inside of you, you also need to know what healthy love would look like. And so we go into the love styles model, that secure versus insecure attachment, and we begin the study of the neurosciences and how the brain triggers your heart and vice versa. So we also touch on the difference between human love and divine love. You know, we have this connection to God, which is divine, and then we look at our human partners and we go, gee, they're not very godlike. So we have to identify, you know, what is human love. It's not the picture that TV and movies give us.
Well, and the great irony is we are very godlike, but we just have a very warped sense of God. So module two, Chris, you want to share a little about module two?
Yeah, we call module two the three forces of love. That's the distinction of the self love, Our relationship to others is secondary, and then taking our relationship to others out into the world to really having, you know, this love activism, caring for those beyond ourselves and in more in the groups and community levels. And this whole notion of co-regulation, of the importance of finding someone to feel safe with, we aren't saying that self-love and independence and sovereignty isn't equally as important. It's just that most of us, when we're threatened or are confused about love, that's where we default to. So we're actually inviting everyone to self-diagnose where they have a tendency to go more into the self-regulation, the self-love, and where they're missing those building blocks, and then how to diagnose their relationship with others personally, professionally, and then if they really are in an active practice of acts of service to help others less fortunate to improve the world.
Great. Module 3, Lion?
Yes, we call it the mind of love, and this is our focus on beliefs, as we were just talking about. You know, beliefs that we take on, we get from all over the place. We get them first from our parents and then from our siblings. You know, if your sibling looked down at you when you were in the cradle and said, "We got to get rid of this piece of dirt," you know, then, you know, you're going to be picking up beliefs from your siblings as well, other family members. And then we go to school and we pick up certain beliefs from our teachers, and then we go to our religious institutions and pick up beliefs about love there. And we have these layers and layers of programs that are all sitting in our subconscious mind competing with each other. So what we do is we kind of take that apart, examine the different beliefs that we've taken on all through our lives, both as children and as an adult, and then we begin removing the ones that are no longer useful, one by one, and freeing ourselves from that program, from those old programs that are just bad programming. They're like a bad operating system, and it's time for an upgrade.
Amen to that. How about Module 4, Carista, on the heart of love?
Yeah, you can see we've got a holistic journey here, the body and the mind and the heart of love. That's the art of connecting, where we've been talking about love is actually knowing how, the actual skill set to bond positively with another, what we call care, and to deal with the hurtful reactions when we do hurt each other consciously or unconsciously. That's repair. So it's learning the deliberate practice of caring about the other's reality, whether we agree or not, and the impact we're having on them. And then to learn the basic building blocks of repair so that we really know how to bond no matter what's going on, especially when we mess up. And to understand the challenges of our own narcissism, which is a very loaded word in our culture, and yet it's out there big time. We demystify what narcissism is. We all have this wounding. We go into self-absorbed behaviors. So we talk a lot about how to really overcome our own challenges of narcissism, where we collapse in ourselves out of fear of connecting, and how to really work with those that are threatening us with specific ways to develop secure attachment bonds, or no, we can't, and to make those distinctions. We also talk about forgiveness and making amends, and how to, for those who are in romance, preparing for the next one, or those already in romance, how to really to ignite the passion, which is born out of feeling safe and secure with someone. For those who have a flatline sex life, we can tell you what's really sexy is to develop care and repair with your partner, particularly men with women, and things get really juicy. We'll talk a lot about that. It's going
to
take us
to
the fifth module.
Module 5 on the body of love, sex, sensuality, lifestyle balance, and Lion. Of course, we have to let you do this one.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. You know, I'm not only an expert on sex and sensuality, I'm also an expert on narcissism. So I've had a lot of practice in all these areas. So I've got a lot to share with folks, especially men. You know, we want men in this course because men have to understand and learn what their narcissism does in relationships. So, but let's talk about Module 5. So we call this the body of love, sex, sensuality, and lifestyle balance. And it's, you know, as hominids, as ape-like creatures, we need touch. We need connection. We need physical closeness to feel safe and secure. You know, we need the warmth and the comfort of sensuality, and then, of course, we need sex not only to procreate but also to have fun. So we need to bring this into a good balance in our lives, and we need, you know, knowing that it's a needed nutritional element, and yet also it can be addictive. So we look at how to connect with people, how to get our sensual and sexual needs met in a good and healthy way, and how to avoid the dangerous traps of addiction, whether it's to sex or to love or to porn, and how to overcome those addictions, because there are addictive tendencies in the brain, and it's purely chemical. So we have to really know and understand those things so we don't get caught in the addictive processes.
Great. Well, we're running a little low on time, so I'm just going to say, let people know, the Module 6 is on the soul of love. It really goes deep into the compassion virtues and looking at those. And then Module 7 comes back around, and it's all about using your will to create a better world. So so extending love into how we do everything in our daily life and repairing our social contract and shifting from competitive to collaborative dynamics and applying intentional acts of love in social service. So it really is a very full spectrum approach from the body, mind, heart, and soul to the society that really takes this 7-week journey and makes it a very integrated package. So I also wanted to bring a little attention to the bonuses. Lion and Crystal, you've done an amazing job of bringing in some of the foremost pioneers and thought leaders in relationship and love together. You've got Arielle Ford and a really cool bonus on the power of wabi-sabi love, which is a cool term that comes from Japanese reflection, that great beauty can be found in imperfections. So that's a lot about really embracing each other as we are and seeing the beauty and perfection in what we once thought of as imperfection. So it's about a deep shift of perspective that really opens a whole different kind of appreciation for each other. You also have a great bonus with John Gray, how the male and female brain love differently. I used to kind of a little bit be dismissive of John Gray, but because I hadn't really been that exposed to him. I was just like, oh, he's too famous in a way. But actually, he's famous because he really knows his stuff, and he's very entertaining and very powerful. And so he's got some great insights to share about how male and female brains actually love differently. And then you've also brought one of my favorite people in the world into this course, Deborah Rosman, who's the CEO of HeartMath, somebody who really walks the talk of bringing heart and love into every engagement. So, and she's also a first-class scientist, so this is all about the science of connecting through the heart. And Daniel Siegel, the neurobiology of we, one of the foremost neurobiologists in the world, professor of psychiatry and Mindful Awareness Research Institute, really fantastic background in terms of looking at the neurobiology. And as if that all that was not good enough, there's an extra bonus which we are offering just for today only until midnight. And the reason we do this is that it's always good to have a motive for you to tune in right now and just feel into your heart and soul. Is like, are you called into the next level of loving in your life? Do you want to heal some of the conditioning from your childhood and really let that go and be able to navigate that and really create these bonds? And if that's your truth, then I do encourage you to sign up for this program. It's really, really an integrative approach. It really brings the best science forward. And it's and so we're incentivizing you to make that decision today by offering this extra special bonus with Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly-Hunt. Harville and Helen did the Getting the Love You Want, which was an international bestseller, and they're going to be focusing on childhood wounding and how it impacts your relationships. That's a really nice extra bonus from, it builds upon their imago therapy and communication techniques to really offer a very synthetic approach to working with childhood wounds. And so that's available when you sign up by midnight tonight. So you get all of that for just $297 or a little bit more for three payments. It's a really great package. We're really grateful, Lion and Krista, for all you've pulled together to make this program a reality. And it's just a really beautiful offering. I know it's going to be so valuable for people who take this journey and really apply the work and open to a new level of loving in their lives. So again, that's all at powerofloveCourse.com. And there's the extra special bonus for signing up today by midnight. And, you know, I always find it's nice to just hear from your hearts, you know, the invitation, since, you know, we put a lot of energy into creating these courses and putting them out there. And, you know, just I think it's important that people hear from your heart, like, what is the deepest invitation So what, you know, Krista, if you could just express to those listening who are considering joining you guys for the next stage of this journey, what is your deeper invitation? Why join you on this journey?
Oh, I feel where I've come and how anyone is wired for love, the deep abuse and trauma that happened to me and the freedom I feel now to be able to really know what healthy love is and what it is and share it and be it. And I want to find other playmates out there and those who feel they lost the opportunity because of their childhood, it's not true. And, you know, in a small investment of time and learning, you can rewire and be the embodied love that you are, that you really, really have the rest of your life now to experience deep, rich relationships. So that's the invitation. Come join us, and we have a lot to share.
Lion?
Yes, come play. Play is so important to me to be joyful and playful in learning. I mean, to me, learning is an endless playground, and I enjoy everything I learn, and we love sharing it. That's playful for us to share it. I'm also very grateful, and gratitude is one of those practices. So thank you, Stephen, for sponsoring this program, and thank you for listening to our talk, and thank you if you join us, and thank you if you don't join us, but you take this on yourself. Like, let's all play and get better at loving each other, because we can make a great world.
Well, amen to that. Just a bit of gratitude to both of you for just so sharing so much wisdom and vulnerability and heart and playfulness on today's call. I think you've really embodied that which you're teaching, and I really know on a personal level that you are fully committed to walking your talk and putting it into action and really being spreaders of love and the expansion of a new way of being in the world. So thank you for sharing so many gems with us here today, and thank you also for putting together this powerful curriculum in the Power of Love course that can really help people take it to a next level.
Thank you, Stephen. Lots of love to you.
Beautiful. Well, thank you all for joining. And again, if you are feeling called to the next step, there's the extra incentive from Harville Hendricks and Helen McKay Hunt when you sign up today by midnight, and you can do that at powerofloveCourse.com. So thank you all for joining, and may we all be conduits for more and more love and blessing to move in the world. So thank you for being a force of love yourself. Goodbye, all.